3 years on, what has Brexit meant for business? Live from the BBC World Service, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. Will Bain back with you today. Thanks for being with us. Britain's official exit from the European Union and its single market on January the 31st, 2019, marked the biggest shake-up of the economy for decades. 3 years on, how have businesses responded and what impact has it had? Rachel Waring is the Managing Director of Waring's Furniture in Norwich in the east of England.
I've seen changes with some international providers of furniture, say, into the UK. We've seen some of them coming to us and asking us to provide their logistical service. So we have seen a sort of new department spring up. I suppose I've seen suppliers, when they're going to tender, which happens every year or so, lots of European companies were being included in the tender process. And that seems to have tapered off. And where we had to battle really hard to fight off some European competition to retain the business in the UK, it seems that is a thing of the past at the moment.
For Mary Quick, farmer and cheesemaker in Devon in the southwest of England, it's been a struggle.
We used to directly export some cheese. As a small business, it's really difficult to meet the paperwork demands. So we have decided now we don't directly export anything. We sell through other people. And of course, that adds another layer of complexity and presumably cost.
Yeah, it eats into your profit.
Absolutely. And it's just that little bit more difficult to do everything for everyone. At some point, that means that customers are going to go, oh, I can't be bothered.
What has that kind of changed in your business? Have you had to make certain decisions because of that?
Yeah, well, we're certainly making less cheese and we're not replacing people as they leave. There's a range of other things. All of the cheesemakers in this country, if they had cheese that wasn't quite up to scratch, that will be sent to Denmark for further processing. Get processed, made into processed cheese powder or whatever it was. Now, there are no factories like that in the UK, and cheese for further processing, in other words, not considered edible at the moment, but fine if it gets processed, there is currently no license that allows us to export that.
So it simply just goes to waste?
Yes. So that's been a really important part of the circular economy, to make sure every bit of cheese that's made that's safe to eat gets eaten by somebody in some form. And at the moment, that's currently not possible.
So what about the wider impact? The BBC's Darshini David has been looking at the UK's trading relationship with the EU and further afield.
Very little changed on the 31st of January 2020. In terms of Brexit and the trading arrangements in particular for businesses, what did change quite quickly afterwards, of course, is the environment in which we all lived, because we had COVID and then we've had the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. We've had an energy crisis. So if you take all those factors together, it's really quite hard. We do know there was more red tape. The minute you sort of talk about the fact that we have a different system from the rest of Europe, you've got to comply with bits of checks, bits of paperwork, and that has increased costs. That did diminish our exports to the EU, but only in the short term. They've bounced back. Imports coming the other way, however, haven't quite performed as well. And there's some evidence that the price of those has gone up. So that's added to our cost of living problems. But what's also been quite evident is that when you look back over the last 3 years or so, our trade with the rest of the world as a whole hasn't got back to where it was. We talk about global Britain, we haven't really got into our stride. It's a smaller part of our economy. We've got a lot of catching up to do still.
Well, another huge issue still to be worked out fully is the UK's one land border with the European Union between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. The BBC's Northern Ireland economics editor, John Campbell, has more on what's known as the Northern Ireland Protocol and what happens next with it.
Firstly, we need to understand the geography of this. The island of Ireland consists of two separate states, Northern Ireland, which is part of the UK, and the Republic of Ireland, which is an independent state. Now, Northern Ireland, as part of the UK, has left the EU. The Republic of Ireland is still a member. But of course, with the UK leaving the EU, that means there are new barriers to trade. But very early on in this process, the UK and the EU agreed that it would be a very bad idea to create a new physical trade border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. What they came up with was the Protocol. Basically, all it does is it keeps Northern Ireland inside the EU's single market for goods. Therefore, that means that goods do not need to be checked as they go across that land border. However, the flip side is that goods which are coming into Northern Ireland across the Irish Sea from the rest of the UK do need to be subject to checks and controls. So there is this new border in the Irish Sea, as it's sometimes known.
What impact has that had on businesses in Northern Ireland as a result, trying to deal with those two different systems?
The biggest thing is increased bureaucracy when you are moving any goods from Great Britain into Northern Ireland. Now, if you are moving any commercial goods from Great Britain to Northern Ireland, you at least need a customs declaration. If you're moving food products, there's a lot of other bureaucracy involved. And what this means is there is increased cost and complexity to get those goods into Northern Ireland. The flip side of it, though, Northern Ireland manufacturers can export their goods to the rest of the EU in a way that other businesses in the UK cannot do. Now, I've been out speaking to Ashley Piggott. He's the boss of a manufacturer called AJ Power in a town called Craigavon, and they export generators to about 90 countries around the world. And he says goods are still coming in from Great Britain. He is still getting his components, but he has had to abandon just-in-time ordering to try and avoid some of that new customs bureaucracy.
Essentially what we've been doing, which is contrary to all manufacturing principles and contrary to efficiency, is to actually bring bulk loads in. So instead of bringing in pallets of material on a frequent basis, we're now bringing trailer loads of business in. It's having the ability to actually pay for it is the big thing.
Now, in terms of the flip side and that ability to sell into the EU market on an advantageous basis, I was speaking to Brian Reid, and he runs a food company called Deli Lights in a border town called Warren Point.
We've seen our business in Northern Ireland increase. We've seen our business in the All-Ireland market increase. We've seen our business in the GB increase. We've seen our business in the Europe increase. So it's been overwhelmingly positive as a company. And there have been some challenges with supply chain, but I think those challenges have been overcome.
So put us in the picture then, John, in a time frame. What are we looking at going forward in terms of more discussions around this issue? Because we know, in particular, the White House, but other outside forces too, interested in seeing some kind of movement, some kind of agreement.
There are intense discussions still happening, and certainly you're right. The White House is very, very interested in this. They think the protocol does the job of keeping this Irish border open, and that the UK should not act unilaterally to override the protocol. And basically, the White House have made clear it would not be good for US-UK relations if that was to happen.
It always takes a bit of breaking down all of this. We're really grateful to the BBC's Northern Ireland Business and Economics Editor, John Campbell, for doing just that. Thanks a lot, John.
Thank you very much indeed for having me on.
The city of Newcastle-upon-Tyne in northeast England was one of the areas most dependent on trade with the EU. Our reporter Laura Fitzsimmons spoke to these people there who voted to stay in the European Union.
Well, my sense at the time was that it was a stupid thing to do, and I've become convinced even more that that is so. The economy is plunging, travel is more difficult, we're having difficulties over the Irish border, there's a huge amount of new regulation.
I shouldn't have left, no. For staffing issues and for opportunities for young people to go to Europe, but it's too late now, we can't go back, can we?
It's been disastrous. Just small things, say like when you purchase anything or import anything from Europe and the custom charge is 20% plus the VAT.
In any other jobs, not just in hospital or care homes, they have short staff. Restaurants, car wash, and in other countries there are so many people who look for a job. They're happy to come over, but they can't.
So, what about Brexit supporters in Newcastle? Are they happy with how things have gone?
Yeah, I voted for it because I didn't believe in the amount of money we were paying in the EU compared to every other country.
Do you think it's affected the North East at all?
Well, I think it has a little bit, like, industrial-wise. You know, we've lost so many, like, factories.
So if you could have your time again, and would you change your opinion?
It's hard to say because I think the government and everything's rubbish anyway, so
my view was just thinking that we would be better in a single economy market and that we could prosper and grow independently as a country. I haven't seen any change in particular.
We're an island and we're more than capable. We have everything here to look after ourselves.
And do you think the past 3 years since leaving the EU, anything's changed or your opinion's changed on it?
Absolute chaos. Boris the buffoon. You do not get a name like that for no reason.
So that's been the view from the UK, but how does the EU view this debate? The BBC's Jessica Parker reports now from Belgium.
Rows of frozen desserts in little glass ramekins roll off a production line in this small Belgian factory that lies near the French border.
This is a French crème brûlée.
Arnaud Bonnel is the chief executive of Food and Joy.
This is a Belgian chocolate variant. This is a raspberry cheesecake.
The puddings are packed up into boxes to be served in hotels, at events or on trains. Some will end up in the UK, but Arnaud says they're doing 50% less business with Britain than before Brexit.
Before Brexit, I would say life was easy with UK, as we were selling to our customers and with no customs, no paperwork. Of course, life has changed a lot. It's just starting to be much more complex. We had to create a subsidiary in the UK.
Various languages drift across the halls of the Europa building as EU foreign ministers meet.
These days, the UK, Brexit, it really isn't often on the agenda.
But I managed to get a question to the French Foreign Affairs Minister, Catherine Colonna.
It's not on the agenda today, but it's something you know a lot about. What do you hope EU-UK relations might look like going forward? Obviously, there have been some pretty tense times recently.
I do respect Brexit, and we all do respect the result of a referendum, but I'm not sure I'm going to celebrate that anniversary. In any event, we have good relations with the British.
But do you think a trading relationship could become closer over time, and what would that look like?
That is not up to us to decide. You know, the UK decided to split from its major market, so this is to be considered by the UK first and foremost.
French Foreign Minister Catherine Colonna bringing us to the end of this edition of the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.